apostles. Okay, Simon the Zealot was part of the group that became the Zealot group in Israel, which were totally against Rome, and they wanted to fight against Rome. Well, the Issachars were the right-leaning Zealots. They were the ones that didn't only want to get rid of Rome, but they wanted to massacre everyone. You know, if you said that you had anything to do with Rome, they were going to kill you. And so that's one, you can take your pick on that, which reason it's Judas Iscariot, either because of the area that he came from or because of his political leanings that he had. In this type of environment and the temperament that we have, I personally like the political leanings section. So anyway, excuse me. So we had Judas that was picked, one of the apostles that was picked, and then we can continue on with Luke chapter 6, going on to verse 17. And he came down with them and stood on a level place with a great crowd of his disciples and a great multitude of people from all Judea and Jerusalem and the sea coast of Tyre and Sidon, who came to hear him and to be healed with their diseases. So we see that these individuals came from many different areas, came from Judea, which was around this area, Galilee over here, Tyre and Sidon are way up here, close to Lebanon, and so they came from all over that area. Says that they came with unclean spirits, were cured, and all the crowd sought to touch him, for power came out from him, and he healed them all. I have problems with this. There you go. And he lifted up his eyes on his disciples and said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who are hungry now, for you shall be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you shall laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you and when they exclude you and you revile you and spurn your name as evil on account of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven, for so their fathers did to the prophets." Now that section of Scripture is very similar to what other section of Scripture that we have. Dan, were you going to say something? Okay, the Sermon on the Mount. And here it talks about, it says that he came down and stood on a level place. So is this the Sermon on the Mount, or is this another place? The Sermon on the, some people call it the Sermon on the Plateau. Now, the information that's given here is very similar to the information that's given in the Sermon on the Mount. Now, there are a couple of reasons why this could be. What might be some of the reasons why this information could be the same? Okay, could be the same event. So the Sermon on the Mount could be the same thing as the Sermon on the Plateau here. Flora.
Maybe he's speaking to a different crowd.
Maybe he's speaking to a different crowd. Would it be unusual to have the same subject matter to a different crowd? No, not at all. He was preaching to the individuals there, and so he probably used some of this information many, many times. Yes, Grant.
Quite a lot of Randy's statement there, which I kind of agree with. This, in Luke's account here, it's a more abbreviated listing of the Beatitudes.
Okay. Okay, all right. So we had the edited form here. And since Luke was written to the Gentiles, he would have a different type of audience than Matthew, who was writing for the Jews. And so there would be a difference there. I'm not totally convinced it's not the same sermon that he's referring to, but I could be easily dissuaded from that if you have some proof on that. But anyway, this is one of the places. There are many places along the Sea of Galilee where this could have been given. This area here is just south of Capernaum. Remember, Capernaum is where Jesus based his ministry from, around the Sea of Galilee. You have the Sea of Galilee back in the distance there. And this here is the place where, actually, this is the place where they say the Sermon on the Mount took place. And this could be the same place. It's a flat place. And Pastor and I had a rather lively discussion on this, on whether Jesus would be standing at the lake shore and speaking up. Pastor thinks Jesus was standing up on top here and was speaking down to them. That just doesn't make sense to me, and I told Pastor that. You have an auditorium. What is a normal auditorium? What is the configuration of that? The speaker is down low and the people are going on up. But anyway, the acoustics for some place like this is really good. And you could hear from a long ways away. This reminds me also, anybody here been to the Burning Amphitheater in Medora, North Dakota? Okay, so you've got, all right, yes. And so you've got the same type of thing. The audience is up on the hillside, you've got the speakers down below, and the acoustics are fabulous for an outdoor auditorium type of thing. So anyway, Jesus was somewhere around the Sea of Galilee where he was now giving the Beatitudes, a shortened version of the Beatitudes, and whether it was the same crowd as the one in Matthew or whether it was a different crowd, he's still covering pretty much the same material. There's one thing, though, that's a little bit different, and this is verses 24 through 26. It says, "But woe to you who are rich, for you have received your consolation. Woe to you who are full now, for you shall be hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you shall mourn and weep. Woe to you when all people speak well of you, for so their fathers did to the false prophets." So Jesus in Matthew is basically just giving the Beatitudes, and it talks about the blessings that they would have, whereas here he's now also giving the opposite effect. If you don't do this, these are the things that are going to happen to you. Now, who was his audience that he's speaking to? Okay, the Gentile audience, that's who he's writing to, but Jesus is speaking now to, he's speaking to a lot of different people. There are disciples, there are apostles there are non-believers there. As we said, they came from all over the area, and we go on up to this area. Oh, that's the wrong map. Okay, this area, Tyre and Sidon, there could have been a lot of Gentiles from up there that would come on down to hear him. And so he is speaking to a wide audience, and so he's giving more than just the blessings that the individuals would have. Then we go on to verse 27. "But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. To one who strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from one who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Give to everyone who begs from you, and from one who takes away your goods, do not demand them back. And as you wish that others would do to you, so do to them. If you love those who love you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. Be merciful, even as your Father is merciful. So, what general thing can we get from this section of the Sermon on the Plateau? Unconditional love? All right. You want to expand on that just a little bit? Yes, Randy. Be nice even if it kills you. All right. Okay. In other words, don't just be nice to somebody who's going to be nice back to you, but be nice to other individuals. Okay? Anything else that we have here? I'm not, yes, Grant.
Well, along that same line of four on Randy, we're to do good to all people, we're to do it without an expectation of a return.
All right. And the specific things that he talks about here strikes you on one cheek, turn the other one also. Somebody takes your cloak, give them your tunic also, and so on. I'm not sure that he is speaking about specific things here, but I think it's more of an attitude that you should have when somebody does something to you or wants something from you, that you would now love them even though the things that they are doing are rather unlovely. And so, I don't think this means that you have to carry around an extra cloak to give to somebody else if they demand it from you, but that we have this because the last verse that we have, verse 36, be merciful even as your Father is merciful. So now, what type of love does Jesus have for the saints? Pardon? Okay, unmatchless. He does not expect anything in return. He doesn't love because he wants to get something back. He loves because he loves us. He made us. We are his creation. And so he loves us for this reason. And I think that he is trying to get across to these individuals. Now, We mentioned this earlier, the people that were in this crowd. There were probably Gentiles in there. There were a lot of Jews. There were also a lot of Jewish rulers in this crowd. And what were the Jewish rulers? Who were those? Pharisees and the Sadducees. And what was the attitude of the Pharisees, basically? We will do something for you so you can do something for us. Or we will show how spiritual we are for you to come this. And so I think he is directly talking against those individuals that they should be, that they needed to have a change in attitude. Verse 37, judge not and you will not be judged. Condemn not and you will not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over will be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. He also told them a parable. Can a blind man lead a blind man? Will they not both fall into a pit? A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me take out the speck that is in your eye," when you yourself do not see the log that is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, then you will see clearly to take out the speck that is in your brother's eye. Okay, it talks about to start with that we are not supposed to judge. Is this possible? Pardon? We're human? Okay, all right. All right. We're human? Expand on that a little bit. Is it possible that we should not, could not judge, or we should not judge? Grant? Okay, all right. You hear people say, you know, that they're not going to judge because the Bible says, "Judge not that ye be not judged." We all have to make judgments. We have to make judgments about various things, but how we make these judgments is the difference. Now, again, the Pharisees, they placed themselves up on this pedestal that they were these super spiritual individuals when they were actually very hypocritical about what they were doing. And so they were judging people, and this is what Jesus is talking about, is that you are careful about the judgments that you make. There are certain judgments that we have to do. And he then brings in the example of the individual, the blind man leading the blind. If a blind man is leading somebody that is also blind, they're both going to run into trouble. And so he's talking about that the Pharisees here are the blind people, and because they are blind, they are going to lead their congregations or their people into sinful aspects also. And so he talks about that they are hypocritical, that they need to see their own fallacies, they need to see their own sins first before they try and correct someone. It talks about the disciple not being above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. And this is one of the things that, as a teacher, I actually took quite seriously. And this is that if my students were going to follow me, I wanted to make sure that they followed in a proper way and that I was the proper type of example for them. And we have gotten to listen to Dennis Prager, and some of you have probably heard him. And he talks about how college graduates are the stupidest people around because of the teachers that they have. And most of our colleges, especially the ones that have been around for a while, are very liberal, and the professors are very liberal, and so their students are ending up being that way and probably even try to go one step further than their professors or their teachers. And so you end up with a whole population that is very liberal thinking, and this is just because the students are following the teachers, and the teachers need to be careful that they have the proper perspective, that they have the proper viewpoint. And you can't have the proper viewpoint if you've got all kinds of blinders and things that are covering you. Any other comments or questions on this? Okay, Jesus is still on the Sermon on the Plateau, or the Sermon on the Level. Verse 43, "For no good tree bears bad fruit, nor again does a bad tree bear good fruit. For each tree is known by its own fruit. For figs are not gathered from thorn bushels, nor are grapes picked from a bramble bush. The good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good, and the evil person out of his evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaks." And so we're seeing here that the teacher, the good teacher, is going to end up with a good crop or good students, and the bad teacher is going to end up with bad students. Now, there's going to be some exceptions to this. You have some individuals who are bad students and bad teachers, and they do end up with some good students because God has given them some discretion and ability to think on their own. But basically, a tree is going to bear the fruit that it is known for. And so you have a grapefruit tree, you don't expect to get lemons from that. You have an apple tree, you're not going to get oranges from it. And so he's talking about the Pharisees here, and he's using the Pharisees as an example. The Pharisees, basically being bad teachers, are going to end up with bad students from this, and so he is trying to point out to them that they need to correct their way. Verse 46, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I tell you? Everyone who comes to me and hears my words and does them, I will show you what he is like. He is like a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock. And when a flood arose, the stream broke against that house and could not shake it because it had been well built. But the one who hears and does not do them is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. When the stream broke against it, immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great." And all of you are thinking of the song that you learned in VBS now. And what happened when the floods came and the house went smash. So anyway, here Jesus is now still, he's got this big crowd, but I think that he is really focusing on the Pharisees and the Sadducees here, because they are supposed to be the foundation of the religious tenure of the Jews. And if they aren't solid in what they're preaching, then the audience that they have is going to fail also. And so this probably was directed at the Pharisees, and on this whole sermon, there are points here that I think were specifically pointed to the Pharisees, and if they were paying attention, they should have learned from this. Okay, that is chapter 6. Any questions on that? Questions or comments? Now, the Beatitudes, as given in Matthew, go on for a few chapters, and so they are quite a bit more extensive than what we have here. But this is the end of the Beatitudes section in Luke. Then we go on to chapter 7. "After he had finished all his sayings in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. Now a centurion had a servant who was sick and at the point of death, who was highly valued by him. When the centurion heard about Jesus, he sent to him elders of the Jews, asking him to come and heal his servants. And when they came to Jesus, they pleaded with him earnestly, saying, 'He is worthy to have you to do this for him, for he loves our nation. He is the one who built us our synagogue.' And Jesus went with them. When he was not far from the house, The centurion sent friends, saying to him, Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Therefore I did not presume to come to you, but say the word, and let my servant be healed. For I too am a man set under authority, with soldiers under me, and I say to one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and turning to the crowd that followed him, said, I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. And when those who had been sent returned to the house, they found the servant well. Okay, so here we have Jesus is now up at Capernaum, and Capernaum is over here. And he has the centurion which comes to him. Now the centurion would have been a part of the Roman army, and at that time the Romans were not part, they were not ruling Israel at this time yet. They didn't rule Israel or didn't move in until about 44 AD. And so what this centurion was doing was he was probably, let's see, where is Caesarea? Yeah, Caesarea Maritimus is right here. This is where Herod had his palace, and one of his palaces. And so the centurion was probably guarding the Herod's palaces. And so he would have come from Caesarea Maritimus over here to Capernaum to see Jesus. And so that is a couple of days' journey, maybe a day's journey by horse. So anyway, it's a ways that he had to go to talk to Jesus. Now, what are some things about this centurion? What are some things that mark this centurion which may have been different from other centurions? What is his attitude toward the servant?
He liked the servant.
Okay, he liked his servant. He says, this is a good servant. And the centurion also, what did the Jews say about the centurion? The centurion likes us. The centurion has helped us with many things. And so he was well known and well liked in that area. And so for a centurion to be kind to a slave was somewhat unusual. And so we have this centurion which had this this reputation about him. Now a centurion was a leader of 100 soldiers. And so he had a group, and I have not been in the military, and so I'm not sure what the our unit would be. It would be approximate something like that. Yes. Pardon?
Of
company, okay. So anyway, so he was a leader of about 100 soldiers. Now there were 6 centurions that would get together, and so there would be 600 soldiers. They would make up a tribune or a tribune. And so they had this organization, and so he was probably with 100 soldiers, and he was guarding Herod's palace, probably over there in Caesarea Maritimus. He contributed also, it says that he contributed to the building of the synagogue. Now, this could have been the synagogue in Capernaum. There were synagogues that were all along the western shore of Sea of Galilee. So there could have been others there. There would have been synagogues in some of the other areas too, but it says that he was, had contributed to this. He also recommended or recognized the difference between Jews and Gentiles. And Jesus recognized the centurion's faith, not his works or his position. So being a centurion means that he was a leader of a group of soldiers, so he was a leader, but Jesus didn't recognize him for that, or the fact that he was a Roman, but it says that And Jesus said, let's see, we have, when Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, turning to the crowd that followed him. I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. And so he was speaking to the Jews that were surrounding him, Pharisees and Sadducees, and he says, this centurion is showing more faith in me than you people are. And you are supposed to be the leaders of the Jews. And so when the centurion went back to Caesarea Maritimus, and it doesn't say that he was from there, but that is logical. His servant was feeling great. And so the faith that the centurion had in Jesus was rewarded in this situation. Any comments or questions? Yes.
He was intelligent, he was open-minded, and wasn't brainwashed.
Okay. All right. He was intelligent, he was open-minded, and wasn't brainwashed. And so those are some good attributes for all of us to have. Yes, Gordy. Right.
He already figured out that Jesus has all authority, just like Jesus told his disciples. At the end of the centurion already figured that out, and that's probably why he's treating the Jews so well as well.
Okay, yes. He is treating the Jews well because he knows that Jesus is the Savior here. Any other comments? Okay, verse 11. Soon afterward, he went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a great crowd went with him. Okay, Nain is down in this area someplace. We went from Capernaum down into Nain, someplace right in here. This map doesn't seem to have it on it. But he went on down to that area. And it says, as he drew near to the gate of the town, behold, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and a considerable crowd from the town was with her. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, do not weep. Then he came up and touched the bier, and the bearers stood still, and he said, young man, I say to you, arise. And the dead man sat up and began to speak, and Jesus gave him to his mother. Fear seized them and all, and they glorified God, saying, a great prophet has arisen among us, and God has visited his people. And this report about him spread through the whole of Judea and all the surrounding country. Now it seems that Luke, in his account of this, goes through a lot of little details about this individual and his mother. Why would that be important that he went through this, that this was a widow, this was the only son that this woman had? Why would Luke have taken note of these different account or these different things? What kind of a social security system did they have? Your children. Your children were your social security system. And so she only had one son. She didn't have a husband. The son was now gone. And so she was going to be in dire straits. And so this is one of the reasons why I think that Luke points all of these things out, is that this was a serious situation for this woman, that she had lost her income. She had lost the way in which she was going to be able to survive for the next few years. And so then we see Jesus healed this individual. And the healing was done because of great faith by the individual, right? He was dead. you can't have faith when you're dead. And so the aspect of the healing was done because of whose faith? Pardon? Okay, the mother. The mother had faith. Jesus, and also Jesus was doing some of the things that he had been speaking about in his sermon on the plateau of being able to love those who couldn't love back, taking care of those who couldn't take help you, and so on. And so he is using this as an example, and he is now brought this individual back to life, and he was able to continue on helping his mother. Also, we see that Jesus did something here that went against Jewish rules when he came up to the casket or whatever they had. What did Jesus do? He touched them, right. And so this was meant that you were now unclean. And so he was able to, he touched the casket, the bier, and was able to now use this to show again his standing that he was the creator, he was the maker. And this goes, I think, to the Pharisees and the Sadducees again. Okay, Jesus gave the Ten Commandments. He gave the law. He gave the rules. And now the Pharisees had amplified these many, many, many times. And Jesus is now saying that I made the rules here. These are things that I have done. And so we see that he was able to, the fact that he was touching the beer didn't make any difference. Okay, I think we have time for one more section here. The disciples of John reported all these things to him. Okay, now John was in prison at this time. This is John the Baptist. This is not John his apostle. This is John the Baptist. Disciples of John reported all these things to him, and John, calling two of his disciples to him, sent them to the Lord, saying, "Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another?" And when the men had come to him, they said, "John the Baptist has sent us to you, saying, 'Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another?'" In that hour he healed many people of diseases and plagues and evil spirits, and on many who were blind he bestowed sight. And he answered them, "Go and tell John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, the poor have good news preached to them. Blessed is the one who is not offended by me." And when John's messengers had gone, Jesus began to speak to the crowds concerning John. Okay, I think we'll stop right there. So now, what is John the Baptist? He is in prison. What is his concern? What had John the Baptist been preaching when he was out in the wilderness? I know this goes back about three or four Sundays, and who am I to think that you will remember that far back? What had he been preaching? Yes. Okay, that Christ is coming, and John was the forerunner, and that the Christ was coming, the individual that was coming, that John wouldn't even be able to, or wouldn't be, shouldn't untie his shoelaces, shouldn't unbuckle his sandals, and so on. And so this is what John is saying. But now what is he asking his disciples here? Is this really the person that I thought it was? Are you the Christ? And so John seems to have some real doubts here. Is this, what do you think about John's attitude here? Yes, Flora. Right. Okay. All right. All right. You don't understand that. Yes, Randy. Okay, who was still in control of the country? Rome was still in control of the country. And I think that John, as Randy said, was just expecting that Jesus would come on in, would be the king, would be the ruler, would throw out the Romans, and this hadn't happened. And John is sitting in prison. And the prisons at that time were not, they only had black and white TV instead of color TV in there. In their cells. Prisons were pretty miserable places to be. And so John is just wondering, and can you really humanly blame John? I'm sure that many of us in that same situation would have these doubts. Okay, we'll continue on from there next Sunday, and you are dismissed for this service.